Kathy Nesbitt, Reel One.
I was interested, actually, in your autobiography to see that your mother was a suffragette.
Yes, yes, she was a very, very eager and keen one. I remember coming back from America. I'd been out on America on a tour with the Irish Players, and I came back to London and found her in prison. And I went down to visit her in Holloway, and I struck the exercise hour. They were all, the suffragettes were in prison, were walking round the prison yard, and Dame Ethel Smythe, who'd written a woman's marching song, was conducting with a toothbrush from her cell window. I should never forget that. My mother was, but mother was what I call a very eager, idealistic sort of, whatever she took up. I know she was in Belfast for a time. She took up theosophy and she was mad about it and studied about it and read about it. And then she took up suffrage, and then when women finally got the vote, I wondered what she'd next take to, and she took to astrology and became a very fierce astrologist. She always had something to believe in.
Did she tell your fortune through astrology?
Oh, she'd tell everyone's fortune, make horoscopes for everyone.
Was she correct?
Well, it did it difficult to judge, because sometimes it would hit the nail and sometimes it wouldn't. And there was always an explanation with an astrologer. If they say this next month is going to be a marvelous month, she said, you know, that you're a Sagittarius and the arrows are going far, it's going to be a wonderful month for you. And then if it happened to be a bad one, she said, well, of course, Gemini was on the cusp when you were born, and that's a very erratic sign. There was a famous air marshal, Sir Sefton Branken, who was head of the air force in the First World War, and they sent up the airship, the first airship, I think it was after the war, that was, must have been, the 101, which went down with all on board.
Yes.
And I said to Mother, but didn't you see Sefton's death when you saw him the last time? And Mother said, well, of course I should have seen it, but I was so busy with this House of Venus, because he was always consulting her about his love affairs. He generally had a wife and several ladies, all being balanced. And he used to come and ask Mother's advice on how to get out of various things, and so I suppose she'd only looked at his House of Venus, as she said.
Do you follow your own horoscope now?
No. I very often look at it out of curiosity in the paper. Just funnily, on some days it says something that comes right and other days not, but I wouldn't regard it as a really... So I was very amused. I was dining the other night with Peter Rogers, who's a producer at the BBC, done several things I've been in, and Sonella Fielding, and a girl called Georgina Cookson, number two actresses, and they were all firm believers. They won't make a step without consulting their astrologers. I'd no idea that so many people still do believe, absolutely. Say that astrologers can always tell them what to do and predict the future.
You say your mother was involved in astrology after the First World War.
No, it was after the... Yes, after the First World War it was, yes. Because she died, I'm trying to think to balance, it was some... She died in 1939, so she died before the Second World War.
I was just wondering if there was interest in astrology during the First World War.
Probably there was. I'd heard quite often of... I think someone said that Asquith always consulted his horoscope. But as Mother wasn't interested in it then, I didn't really know very much about it. I didn't hear much about it until she took it up.
When was it that she actually became involved with women's rights? Were you quite little then, or had you already...
No, I was about 17 or 18, I think. And I knew she was very keen on woman suffrage, and most of her friends, was when we were living in London then, she thought it monstrous that women shouldn't have the voice. It was all during the First World War. And she and a friend went and broke a post office window with their little hammers. That's why they're imprisoned. And then when women finally got the vote, which is so awful, my memory's so bad I can't remember. It must have been about 1920 or 21. I know she was crippled with arthritis by then, so I had to march. It's the least I could do, I felt. Not that I cared very much by having a vote myself, but I marched in the Woman's March to the Albert Hall, a triumphant march all the suffragettes had.
Had you ever taken part with her in any suffragette meetings?
No, never.
Was that because you were not sympathetic or because you were too busy?
It was because I think possibly it was because I was in a profession which there was very little. Women didn't suffer from like so many women nowadays, from less pay or harder work or anything. I mean, the stage was then, and always has been, I think, one of the professions in which a woman can do just as well as a man. And I had realized how monstrous it was in reading history in the past of the Married Woman's Property Act came until that, you know, and the many disadvantages women suffered under, but I had a vague feeling that most of them by this time had been overcome. And, I mean, after the wars, it seemed to me women could go to universities and become doctors and lawyers, and I've never really regarded even universal suffrage as being, I suppose it has to be, but I don't know that democracy works any much better than anything else. The number of people who know why they're voting for something, I think a very minimal out of every 100 people who know enough to give a balanced judgment.
Yes, I'm sure you're right.
There aren't that very many, and I think people, I'm sure nowadays, thousands of women just vote because their husband votes liberal or conservative. My husband was a member of Parliament for a time. I remember going to Newcastle to canvass for him. And it did seem to me that it was just a question of, it's the old saying, every little child alive is born either a liberal or a conservative.
What did your father think of your mother's women's rights activities?
He was amused and entertained by it, I think, and he was... But he was like me. He was rather... Which is a lack in both our characters. He was rather sceptical about vivid enthusiasms for anything. Because Mama, bless her heart, was always ready to believe, you know, when she... With arthritis, there is no cure for it. But she, unfortunately, my legs aren't affected. I can walk, but I know my hand and my neck. I can hardly turn my head. And anyone suggested a new cure to her, a diet or anything else, you would. And I remember one woman used to come and be paid quite a good sum to lay her hands on her knees because Mother said she had healing powers. That kind of thing. Father and I laughed. We were glad for her that she imagined that it was helping her, and I suppose it does. I suppose the power of mind over matter is very strong. Well, I found that, I know, on stage, I mean, once you get on the stage, your mind and your part takes over, and I've known myself feel so ill in the dressing room that I didn't have to go on the stage. I think I should have passed out, but once I got on, I felt all right, and once I got back to the dressing room, I felt ill. And so there is a great power, but you can't always bring it to bear on yourself.
From the early chapters of your autobiography, I wouldn't have guessed, if I hadn't already known, that you were going to become an actress.
No, I wouldn't myself either. I really... I mean, Belfast is such a was in those days, such a stolid Presbyterian method. I think my own grandmother would have been horrified at the idea. She hardly liked passing a theatre on the street. She thought it was an abode of sin.
Did she live long enough to know that you were...
No, she didn't. But I think it was kind of... I went to France and I learned to speak French fluently, got a degree in French, and I could think of no way of using it in Belfast except teaching French, and it seemed to me a teaching career was not what I wanted. And by sheer chance I took part in an amateur performance and found I loved it and went on from there.
When you were in France, in fact, in 1904 to 1906, was there any, what you might call, war cloud on the horizon?
Now, when was I in France? I can't remember when I went. I thought it was 19... I was 1688 to 1898. No, it must have been about 1906 or 1907.
Yes.
It was before the war, yes. And there was quite a long time before the war, because I know there was no talk or feeling of war at all then. In fact, I'm trying to remember, because I can remember so vividly that before the Second World War, everyone was saying, of course there's going to be a war soon, and one tried not to believe it. But it came terribly unexpectedly, I think, to the average person, the First World War.
You were not particularly interested in politics, though, yourself?
No, I wasn't. Whatever.
When you were in France, did you know any Germans?
Any?
Any Germans?
No. I've never met many Germans, and I was always... I suppose I'd had the same. I was very surprised, I remember, when the Second World... Wait, mixed the First World War again. Went to Rupert Brooke saying, oh, I hate the thought of being at war with Germany, because I do love the German people. Well, he knew Germany. He'd stayed there just as I would have felt awful if we'd been at war with France, because I loved the French people and had lived there.
During the First World War, actually, there were quite a lot of stories going around about the Germans, about their behaviour towards the Belgians particularly.
Oh, yes.
Did you used to hear any of
that? Yes, and there were always talks. And there was much more bitterness in the average public. I don't think in the Second World War the public thought of the Germans as being complete devils and barbarians. But during the First World War, whether it was worked on by as propaganda and on, but people thought that Germans were terrible. I mean, even the Dachshund, it was a German dog, so you couldn't keep it. And I remember when I was in the censorship office, I was sort of practically in command of one little group, and a girl came up to me and said, oh, there's a letter here we can't pass through. It's written in German to a German lady, to a German address. And she held up my beside. It was a letter from Margot Asquith inquiring about their dear old governess, no family in the north. But they thought everything German, there was wicked, there was horrible, there were... And all the sort of the Dad's Army of the First World War. It was. I remember staying on the south coast. Some people called Johnson, and Claude Johnson was the managing director of Rolls Royce. And Mr. Royce used to come down and stay with Mr. Rolls, and we had a house further on the cliff. And one night, Mr. Royce, I think, came over to see Claude Johnson on some business with a torch, and he was walking back along the cliff. And, you know, the blackout all the time, you couldn't sort of thing. And halfway back to his own house, he was arrested by a local guard. Said he was making signals to the Germans. He saw this torch every now and then. It wasn't as if he'd walked along with it every now and then. He started doing things. And he had quite a difficulty explaining that he was Mr. Rolls who was making...
Did that ever...